I'll bet against a better team at home. I don't care who does.
Three massages.
Oh, at least.
Say Adlick one more time. You can't say stuff like this on podcast, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Wednesday, February 17th, 2010. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, three guys more excited about the John Legend concert tonight than this podcast. We got Mike McCall.
How's it going? I've never actually seen you do that before, but when you say this is the show for Wednesday or whatever date, you very subtly look over at your computer and click on the date to make sure you have it right. This looks like it's really part of your process. I've never seen it before.
No, I have no concept of what day or time it is right now, so I just know it's podcast time, so let's do that. We got Bobby Colovi.
I couldn't be happier with Dale today. He's stepping up big time. He's going to let me take the night off as sports editor and go watch my buddy John Legend. We're good friends, don't you know?
Sure. And for the first time on the mic, we got Tyler Jett.
Hi, how you doing? This is kind of a big deal for me. I've never actually done it.
Yeah, you've been promised a lot of podcast appearances, apparently.
He's been begging for a long time, and we've done a good job of keeping him off it, but
when Bob's not screaming about recruiting, he's usually on the outside as a bouncer. I've tried to get in a couple times.
Don't worry.
Bob keeps me out.
We'll be talking about Preston Tucker. There'll be a lot of screaming.
Absolutely.
A lot of love.
That's why Tyler's here. We're going to talk about the UF baseball team starting its season this weekend, but we're going to get to that later. Let's start with some of the new football assistant coaches, Mike and Bobby. You guys just got back from a press conference with some of those new guys. What are your initial impressions of them?
Let's just go guy by guy, talk about our impressions, and then what they mean based on, you know, what we can take from their press conference today.
Well, even go the order they came out. They started with DJ Durkin. I don't know what he's coaching, but he's going to be coaching something. That's pretty much what we got from him.
That
he's brought in to coach outside linebackers when, like, they kind of were thinking about switching to 3-4. That's not so sure anymore. So they're still not sure whether or not he's going to work with outside linebackers, leaving inside linebackers with no coach, I guess, with probably just a grad assistant, or all of the coaches. He's also worked with defensive ends at Stanford, so he might do something like that. So we don't really know what he's coaching, probably linebackers, but he doesn't even know whether he's going to be working with all of them or just the outside linebackers. He's going to have – the big thing about him is that he's going to have a large role in special teams. I don't know if he's going to be the special teams coach because that's Urban's specialty.
See what you did there.
Yeah, but with the whole he needs to take a lesser role type thing, looks like Durkin will probably play a big part in coming up with some of the schemes, some of the coaching aspects of special teams.
Right, and Durkin also was an assistant under Meyer at Bowling Green when Meyer first started, so they've got a long-standing relationship. He really knows how Urban's system works and how everything's supposed to go, and that's one thing that really struck me about all three guys today is how well they fit into this group of coaches and how well they fit in with Urban Meyer's system and how much it seems like they've all bought into the program.
Yeah, Stan Drayden said it himself when, you know, someone asked what were you thinking when you got the call? And basically,
the
chemistry and stuff.
Just rehired. Yeah, left a couple years ago to go to Tennessee.
He was just saying how it's a fraternity. There's a bloodline somewhere along the lines. You know, they've passed someone in the staff has crossed paths with them, and that's how it all kind of starts. Is that they all have coached with one other coach in the past. Azani coached with Urban.
Azani,
right?
Being the receivers coach. Yeah, you got to introduce.
Okay, Zach Azani. Well, Zach Azani has gotten his introduction last in the middle of December. He coached with Urban. He also coached with Durkin at one point. Durkin coached with Urban. He's back. Stan Drayden. He was with a bunch of them when he was at UF.
Right.
And then the new defensive coordinator, Terrell, right? Or Terrell?
Terrell
Austin. We're not sure. He just got mentioned as Austin today, I guess. He was with our boy Adazio, the offensive coordinator, interim head coach, for those who don't know who Steve Adazio is, at Syracuse. So they all have had some kind of connection to someone. I thought it was kind of interesting. I mean, we'll talk about, I guess, let's go to Drayden before I start talking about Austin and skip over Drayden.
Yeah, Drayden, if you remember when he left a couple years ago to Tennessee, it was not a good break. It was not a happy separation between him and Urban Meyer. Meyer, very unhappy that someone would leave to go to an SEC East rival.
Yeah, there was also...
Drayden was very upset about the way that running backs are used in Meyer's offense. He didn't think they were featured enough. He kind of felt like he was wasting his time as a running backs coach. So he left. Went to Tennessee for a year. That staff kind of fell apart.
That was Phil Fulmer's last year.
Right, and now he did admit today he was a little bit surprised when Meyer called him to come back and be the running backs coach. But their relationship, even though they kind of had a rough period, they never really lost respect for each other. So in that sense, he always knew they'd be able to work together again if they had to. And he has a relationship with a lot of the guys on this team. You know, a big reason why Emmanuel Moody came here when he transferred was to work with Stan Drayton. They had a relationship, and then Drayton left. So Drayton coming back probably means good things for Emmanuel Moody, and Drayton spoke highly of Moody today in the press conference. He also worked with Chris Rainey a lot while he was here, but that was not a very good relationship, I can tell you firsthand, because I lived on Chris Rainey's floor in my dorm. And this is when Drayton was still here. And one morning I woke up to Drayton screaming at him in the hallway and telling him about missing class and meetings, and that he was going to have to meet Stan Drayton at his office every morning at like 6:30 until they like worked this stuff out. But he said today, you know, Chris Rainey's a totally different guy since he came back, and that they still had talked on the phone during the time when Drayton was away, and that he can see where Rainey's really matured a lot. And another thing Drayton said, very interesting about Rainey, is that he is going to be working half with Drayton, half with Azani, meaning he's going to be doing that Percy Harvin type position where he's running back and receiver. They're really throwing into that with him working with both of those coaches. So that's something to keep an eye on.
I was saying earlier, I was surprised that they really never did that with him before, because if you watch him in high school, he kind of had that role. He was a wide receiver, he was a running back. He kind of did everything for Lakeland during the championship run. So it seemed just kind of like a natural fit to at least, you know, try him out at running back or try him out at that position. He wasn't obviously was not a real wide receiver, wasn't a, you know, a great route runner, but at least he, you know, he showed that he had receiving skills. He can catch the ball. He can make plays in the passing game, and then he's also a dynamic running back. So I thought it was always kind of a natural fit to at least try him there, and he never really got that. And then he finally, when Brandon James was hurt going into the Sugar Bowl, he was going to assume that role of that kind of slash, and then Demps got hurt early, so he just went back to running back. But I thought it was kind of just something that should have happened much earlier, and it's finally happened. That kind of, because we everyone kind of noticed, because, you know, they said, you know, evaluate the guys you have. And he goes, you know, Demps is great. He's explosive. You know, Moody's starting to grow some hair on his chest. He's going to start playing behind the pads. Gillislee is a combo of both. And then everyone's like, well, you didn't mention Rainey. And he's like, well, you, and like, is he working with Azani? And he was saying, you know, yeah, he's been working with Azani, but, you know, he's also going to be working with me. And that's kind of how it started. So he kind of left Rainey out of his initial evaluation of guys.
What did he mean, Emmanuel Moody's growing hair on his chest?
You know,
how does he know?
Well, you know, I mean, he obviously he just means he's starting to become tough. He's not, I guess, a little, you know, he was always kind of known for tiptoeing through the hole and not really, you know, hitting the hole hard. So I guess he's finally starting to lower his pads and actually get to make some plays.
Was this the first time a UF coach has brought up Emmanuel Moody unprompted in a press conference?
Yeah, this is what...
it's a big moment for him.
And then he brought up, and then they talked about their relationship. And it really seems as though he might be pushing for Emmanuel Moody to get more playing time, because it seems like Moody's his guy. Like, you know, he worked hard to get Moody to transfer. Moody wanted him. They're happy to be back to together. You know, they're reunited and feel so good. And wow. Sorry, and I think he's going to push for Moody to have more playing time. So I expect everyone who's begging for Moody to get more carries, I'd say expect him to get more carries with Stan Drayton. So
McCall, have you been talking to Stan lately? What's going on here? You must be pumped
about Stan Drayton. Oh, I'm really
about Moody.
I can't tell you
not
how
Moody.
Excited. Well, yeah, no, I can't tell you how excited I am that Moody's going to have more of a role in the offense. I think it's a good move. I think Moody's going to do really well next year. And I also think Carl Moore is going to do really well next year. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Then last guy up was Terrell Austin, the new defensive coordinator. Not a whole lot out of him. You know, he hasn't been here that long. He hasn't had enough time to evaluate players, so he didn't want to talk about that. He felt like it'd be unfair to praise someone he hadn't seen everybody. Pretty noncommittal on what kind of scheme he's going to be using, although he did say, you know, some of the 3-4 type stuff, which the Gators had last year also, will stick around. But they're still figuring out who's going to have what responsibilities with the staff. It's not all ironed out yet. Probably the most newsworthy thing still with this program is Urban Meyer and when he's going to come back or not come back or retire or if nothing's going to change. Right now he's on an indefinite leave of absence. There's not going to be a whole lot of news coming out about him, most likely. He's going to keep everything private. But one thing that was interesting today is all three coaches were asked about how, when they were hired, was it a concern whether or not Meyer was going to be around, and what did he say to them to convince them? And they said, well, that wasn't even like part of my thought process. Like, the foundation of the program is really strong. They all said the foundation of the program is very strong. So they were obviously, to me and Bobby and everybody else who was
there,
the
media relations
up.
People did a great job. Yeah, they drilled that into them, and they made sure that was going to be said. The big thing from him, though, I thought he was a really nice guy. He seems, I mean, I'm sure they'll beat that out of him once Meyer gets back. You can't be a nice coach, except Dan McCartney. He seems to slip by somehow. And Heater. The old guys, they can be nice. Mm. If you're young and still impressionable, no, they'll beat it out of you.
Right.
And all
we
three of these coaches,
with that attitude.
No, you don't get anywhere. Look at poor Chuck Heater. He didn't get the defensive coordinator job he wanted. He's just the assistant defensive coordinator. Poor guy. But the big thing with him, and this is, you know, it was he the whole I don't even remember the what was the defensive coordinator that was hired?
Edwards.
He was you know, Meyer's guy right after National Signing Day. Meyer was on break, and of course that didn't happen. You know, Edwards left, so they still needed to do it. And they were saying, well, you know, I'm still on break. This is Adazio's hire. And it seems that it really was Adazio's hire because Meyer didn't have any ties with him. This was Adazio. He put in the call. He said, you know, what's it called? Austin was saying, like, he got a call that said, like, hey, like, would you be interested? He said, you know, yeah, but I just signed a contract extension, so you need to talk to the Arizona Cardinals head coach, Ken Wisenhut, to make sure everything like this is okay. So, you know, that all happened. And, I mean, Meyer was there for the interview, but it seems as though this really was an Adazio hire more so than, you know, Meyer just still being overbearing. So that kind of, I mean, even though a lot of people didn't believe that he was going to take some kind of leave, you'd still have some kind of, he'd still be the, you know, overbearing coach. He apparently he did take some sort of backseat to this one and let Adazio make this hire.
And also it was interesting as to the timetable of George Edwards leaving because we were never really sure on that, like when they knew. But Austin said today that Adazio called him like the Monday before signing day and said something might be happening. Would you be interested in being defensive coordinator? So they did know before signing day George Edwards was going to leave, which was something that we heard that they didn't know until it actually happened. So, I mean, but that makes sense. Like, you're not going to let that break before signing day and mess up anything, even if George Edwards didn't have a big role in recruiting. Oh, another thing, recruiting-wise, Stan Drayton is going to be the recruiting coordinator, and he's in charge of Dade County.
And the Orlando areas.
Whatever, but Dade County.
Most importantly, 305.
They're gonna put really put an emphasis on that. And he's a good recruiter. I mean, Stan Drayton knows how to get guys. He's got a pretty good personality, so I think he'll work out well. Austin is going to have the Atlanta area. And where did Durkin say he was going to be recruiting?
I guess he's probably going to be on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Just because he's from, you know, he was out at Stanford for a couple years, so he's at least got some sort of ties over there, so he'll probably head out over there that way.
A couple of notes. One, does George Edwards put UF on his resume? I kind of hope he does.
I think he should. He's a defensive coordinator.
He recruited for a month.
Yeah.
He brought in one of the top defensive recruiting classes of all time, right?
Yeah,
he did a great job. He had a great stint as as UF's defensive coordinator.
It was pretty flawless, actually. I can't think of anything he did wrong.
No, great recruiting.
Two, does DJ Durkin have the best name out of any coach at UF?
Ooh, he's competition with. I kind of like Azani, but I don't know. Like
DJ Durkin.
DJ Durkin is good. No, he does. He takes it.
Yeah, for such like a coach who's not really going to have a whole lot of responsibility, so it seems like that's a sweet name.
Also,
he's going to get a fan base.
It'll be very interesting next year with Austin just because there's a huge turnover in the defense. You know, I mean, there's some coming back, but really not a lot. And not a lot. And, I mean, the stars are gone. And this is going to be his first season as a defensive coordinator. So it'll be very interesting that, you know, he's going to be kind of learning on the job as a defensive coordinator with a bunch of guys who don't have much experience. So it'll be very interesting to see how that works out. Although he came across as he was a very soft-spoken guy and came across as a very nice guy. And someone asked if, you know, is this how you're on the field? He's like, you know, I in practice, I'm going to yell. I'm going to get the most out of them. But he's a sideline coach. He's not going to be up in the box. He's going to be on the sideline. Hmm. He says, like, you know, like, but, I mean, I'm putting out fires most of the point. I can't be, you know, getting like all heated in games when, you know, these guys need someone to calm them down. So I think he's going to be a very good match here, and I really like him. I think he's going to be good.
Here's one thing about it, though. You think about it. He was the defensive backs coach of the Cardinals, right?
Yeah.
Did we watch the New Orleans versus Arizona game? One thing I got.
He doesn't have a role here yet. They've said there's still some graduate assistant jobs open. So I think what they're going to do is he might not have a position. He might just be a defensive coordinator. Because right now, Heater's the defensive backs coach.
Right.
But he worked with the safeties. He's worked with the cornerbacks in the past. So he could have both and have a graduate assistant specialize in cornerbacks or safeties. And that way, Heater doesn't have to worry about both. But I think I mean, I think he might have a position title, but I think they're going to lean on a graduate assistant in this case to really take one position in particular, whether it's safety or corner, and then he's going to just be a defensive coordinator. I mean, it's not unheard of for that to happen, so I think that's what you might see with him.
No, but my point is...
Like, yeah, don't worry about that. He's put out some other good... I love how they build him up. They really put out some of like the famous, like the big names he's worked with, and he's helped develop, and he's part of a draft. Like, he helped draft like one of the best like defense secondaries for the Cardinals, despite how poor they looked that one game.
Yeah, but if you just watch the Florida-Alabama game, you'd fire half of Florida staff. And yeah. If you watch the 2007 season, you'd fire every defensive coach. Charlie Strong would never have gotten a head coaching job. So, I mean, you gotta look at what he's got to work with here and what he's going to do with it after he has time to coach these guys up. And really, you're walking into a pretty solid situation where I'm not going to say you can't fail, but it's going to be mighty hard in 2 years' time for this not to be a really solid defense under Terrell Austin.
Well, yeah, the foundation is very strong.
All right, we're going to move on, talk about some Florida baseball. We got one of last year's beat writers in Bobby and one of this year's beat writers in Tyler. So,
and 2 years ago in Mike McCall.
Yeah, who is currently doing some work. So don't expect to hear a whole lot out of me and Mike. And I believe it was 3 years ago.
Oh, it was 3 years ago.
Mike's been here so long.
He's ancient. Mike, despite being like a year younger than me, he's the old man of the group.
I'm an institution.
All right, so I guess we'll start with Tyler. You've got a little list here of things you want to talk about. Yeah. Just give us a preview of the team this year. Start with the pitching rotation.
Okay, yeah, I mean, right now, I think actually at 4 o'clock today, so in about an hour, so by the time you guys listen to this podcast, it'll already been announced, but Kevin O'Sullivan, the coach, is announcing who will be the start of the weekend rotation, your best three guys. It's expected, though, that the Friday night starter, your ace, is going to be Tommy Toledo, who missed last year. He's a redshirt sophomore after getting arthroscopic surgery on his right throwing shoulder last year, so he missed out, but apparently he was pretty much a stud his freshman year. A lot of people were pretty excited about him.
I wouldn't say he was a stud, but he was definitely a very solid pitcher for them and exceeded, I think, anyone's expectations of what they had for him coming into his freshman year. And it kind of looked like, you know, Keating finished that year as their ace, and it kind of looked forward that Keating and Toledo were going to solidify the staff. And Toledo gets hurt and Keating sucks. So, you know, the next year, neither of them are there. But I think they expect Toledo to kind of pick up right where he left off his freshman year. But that brings up an interesting point. Does he get to skip the dreaded sophomore slump since he technically...
Was that his sophomore slump?
I don't know.
Being hurt?
Yeah, I think he actually did not actually dodge that at all.
But, I mean, technically, this is his sophomore.
It hit him really hard,
actually. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting thing. Who's coming up after him?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it's important to note, though, is this is actually, I would say, the biggest question mark of the team is the starting pitching, because the fact that Toledo is expected to be your ace, and he's 4-4 in his career, kind of shows you that he doesn't have a ton of experience yet. He has 1 year under his belt. He was good. You look at his SEC numbers, he was actually 2-4 in conference. He struggled a little bit. So, I mean, you got to figure that it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that starting rotation. Also, though, you've got a lot of good young pitchers. Everyone on this team is young as far as the pitching. Everyone's Sullivan's recruits. I mean, you've also got sophomore Alex Pantaleotis. Mm-hmm. Do you think the Panda is going to be...
I loved Pantaleotis. I know some other people weren't that high on him for some reason, but I really liked him. I thought he ended up being the best of the pitchers last year.
Hmm. Well, did you like him because he was the Panda?
I just liked him. He had a very good presence on the mound. Like, he didn't seem to get rattled. Even the games where he wasn't pitching very well, he seemed to recover nicely in some games. So I thought Pantaleotis ended up being the best out of them, although Marunde was also extremely good. I think he started off a little bit better than Pantaleotis, but I don't know. There's just something about Pantaleotis that I liked better than Marunde. But I wouldn't say like he was a clear-cut best one, which is kind of what makes this year look really good for him, because besides those two in the rotation, there's also Anthony Desclafani, who didn't have... that started in like the weekend starter title at the beginning of the season. He had to kind of earn it. It took a little longer for him to get there.
Right.
But he ended up being very good pitching option as well for them by the end of the season.
All these guys are sophomores, right?
Yeah.
Pantaleotis, Marunde, Sclafani.
Yeah, fun little fact, though, is Pantaleotis and Tommy Toledo actually went to the same high school. Mm. So if you got Toledo Friday and you got Pantaleotis on Saturday, you got a little
similar to what it probably looked there.
At Alonzo High School, pretty fun.
Bringing up the high school name too.
The only other thing that, I mean, you basically got a bunch of sophomores that are expected to carry this rotation, but then there's also a bunch of really talented freshmen. We'll get into the recruiting class later. It was ranked number one in the nation by Baseball America. But one guy that O'Sullivan's particularly liked is Brian Johnson, a freshman from Cocoa Beach. He last week when we were talking to O'Sullivan, he said right now Brian Johnson's going to be in the weekend rotation. He's going to be one of the top three pitchers as a freshman. And another thing about him, though, is he's also been batting a lot, taking a lot of batting practice. They've been working him out at first base a little bit, too. That's more or less just for fun. Like, okay, if Preston Tucker goes down and our backup first baseman, Austin Maddox, goes down, right, we can throw a pitcher out there. But still, there's a chance that he'll be hitting maybe a little DH for fun at some point. I talked to him about it. I'm like, well, what's the chances of you, you know, actually being a hitter? And he said, well, I'm a pitcher, but I'll go up there just for fun and swing the bat every once in a while. So that's kind of, it's kind of interesting.
One of the things, I know you mentioned it, or our other beat writer, Anthony Chang, mentioned it, that Marunde might see time as the closer, which is kind of, I mean, O'Sullivan didn't really have a, like, head into last year, he didn't really have an idea of who was going to be the closer, didn't really know exactly what he wanted, and I can't think of his name.
Billy Bullock.
Bullock ended up stepping up and being a great closer. Ended up being, you know, the shutdown type guy for them.
And got drafted way too high in the MLB
draft. Yeah, and then got drafted way too high for how inconsistent he was throughout his career. But it'll be very interesting to see if they end up going with Marunde or if they can find someone else who can step in and be that end of the game guy. Although in college you don't usually have as defined of a player, but you've seen in the past that there can be an elite closer in college, and those teams usually do pretty well.
Yeah, they brought in so many highly touted pitchers the last 2 years in the recruiting classes that you got to figure, I mean, when you got this many pitchers, it's one of those strategies. I feel like this is the way with most recruiting. You know, not everyone's going to be good, but you're going to get a bunch of people, throw them against the wall and see which one sticks. And with that case, you've got a bunch of options that could go and be solid in the bullpen. And I think that's what's going to end up happening.
That was one of the things that, although the starting rotation was good last year, the bullpen, particularly Tony Davis and Billy Bullock, were great last year. And that they could hold the late-game leads for the starters. So it'll be really interesting because both of them are now gone, both got drafted, of how they, you know, how they rebuild that and have people come out of the bullpen and pitch well. Especially since in high school, you use all these guys are probably starters, have started their whole career, you know, their whole life, and how they'll do as bullpen guys.
The only issue I have with this whole thing, though, is you've got so many young pitchers that, and you're saying, okay, it's going to be the bullpen. You got all these talented young pitchers, but the problem is that, not generally speaking, but on occasion, you're going to have high pressure situations coming in the bullpen. You got to come in with runners on second and third with two outs in a one run game. You got to protect that lead. That's a lot of pressure to put on an underclassman,
right?
And especially in the SEC where it's such a loaded conference,
right? Do they have any upperclassmen in the bullpen at this point?
Kevin Chapman still around? But Kevin Chapman hasn't done much.
He's still kicking.
He's around. Matt Dendecker's cousin, for fun fact of the day.
Yeah. Second fun fact of the day. Yeah. If we're counting.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah, I forgot about the Alonzo High School one. Mm. You would be correct. He's around. I think there's a couple others. It'll be interesting.
It's going to be trial by fire for
they
these
also
guys.
Also, Chaz Spotswood. More than anything else, it's just a fun name to say.
Spotswood can throw hard, but that's about it from all we've been able to see. So he throws the ball hard. Accuracy, not really there. Off speed, not so much. He can throw it.
So he's like a wild thing from Major League?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Great,
I like
comparison.
That.
All right, you want to move on here into the A position players?
All right, let's play a little game. Let's have a little bit of fun here. Let's go through basically all the slated position players and rate them 1 to 10, 1 being this guy might mentally implode and throw a bat into the crowd after he strikes out, 10 being this guy's an All-American.
All right, let me host this because I don't know a whole lot about the baseball team, and I'll trust your opinion on these guys much more than I trust mine. Catcher, you're saying it's going to be Ben McMahon. How do you feel about him?
Well, McMahon didn't do great last year. But he only had 30 at bats the whole season with 3 for 30. But he was highly
didn't do great.
By definition, that's not great. But O'Sullivan was saying basically he's the most improved player on the entire team, bar none. And he spent last summer, I guess, in Cape Cod, where pretty much everyone goes. And he listened to a lot of Vampire Weekend, he said, and was able to just relax a little bit. And I think he worked with a lot of really good pitchers, too. Chris Sale from Florida Gulf Coast, who's one of the best pitchers in the nation. He worked with him.
Fun fact number three.
I know, I'm dropping knowledge today. This can be the Dropping Knowledge podcast.
Absolutely.
If you want it to be. He's basically supposed to be the best, the most improved player. And so he's slated. That's a lot of catchers, though. They've got him. Mike Zunino is a backup who was a freshman coming in that was one of the best players in the nation according to Baseball America. And basically with him, it's just he's just a great defensive catcher. Mm. And then obviously you got Hampton Tigner as a senior who he's nice.
Yeah, he's a spokesman. Yeah.
He's a good guy. But I think McMahon will end up being the starter. And then the fourth guy is Austin Maddox, but he is a big dude who can't move very well. So they don't like the idea of him going down there and trying to be a catcher and stopping pitches necessarily, right. But he is big and he can just barrel that ball. But he'll end up being a DH.
That didn't stop them from sending out Teddy Foster.
That's right, I remember Teddy.
When Stephen Locke was pitching. He pretty much only started when Stephen Locke was pitching. He was his specialist. But last year they kind of had, I mean, Buddy Monroe was the guy, but Hampton Tigner started a decent amount of time, and obviously Teddy was there once a week. So, I mean, they kind of had a split role. Buddy, was clearly the best one of them. He's another guy that's drafted. He's gone. Buddy was fantastic. You'd have loved him.
I would have.
Sure. But Ben McMahon.
I like fantastic people.
Even last year, they were kind of saying that Ben McMahon was good, and then he'd get, he'd see it some occasional time and not do anything. Mm-hmm. So, they've always said that Ben McMahon could be a good guy.
All right, so how much confidence do you guys have in McMahon, 1 through 10?
I'm going to go ahead and say 4.
I was feeling a 4 or 5, just because I feel as though this is going to be a revolving door. A lot of guys are going to see time, especially early on. They're going to try to find out who their actual catcher is. And more importantly, I think they're going to do a little bit of mixing and match. I mean, they've probably kind of done it, see which pitchers feel most comfortable with the catchers. But I think they're...
Actually, no, because I talked to Al Sullivan. I told him, or I didn't tell him, I asked him. I haven't told
him. I sat him down,
yet.
And I said, this is what you're going to do.
I'm actually coaching the team this year, so you're going to have a lot of good inside information about the team. But in reality, what's going on is this, I asked him, I said, hey, are you going to be able to work different pitchers with different catchers? He said, I don't want to do that this year. I want to just use one catcher with one. I don't want to mix and match it. And another thing is he wants to make sure, or he's going to increase the duties of the catcher now where they're calling almost all the pitches. His first year, I was talking to Hampton, and he said that O'Sullivan's first year, the catcher's called about 20% of the pitches. Last year, it improved a little bit, and now this year, he wants to call almost everything. So that's another thing that you got to factor in. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think McMahon will I give him a 4, though.
All right. Do we even have to do the next one? First
11,
base,
12, yep. Whatever you want.
Preston Tucker.
Right field? We should mention that, at least.
Yeah.
I feel this is a good thing to mention. Preston Tucker might be... seeing a little bit possible. They're playing with the idea of him going to the outfield.
It could happen.
He played outfield in high school, is what we should mention. He had to completely learn how to play first base last year because he had no clue what he was doing. And Brandon McArthur kind of, being the seasoned vet at the age of 30. he's only 24, but that was his sixth year.
Kind
of took
man,
him under
yeah.
his wing and taught him how to play first base. And it was actually kind of good because McArthur was a third baseman most of his life and then made the switch over to first, once his knees went. And his arm and his head, he had a bunch of injuries. For those who don't know Brandon McArthur, but he taught him everything you need to know about first base. And so, I mean, Preston Tucker just learned first base. He had grown up playing outfield, so I think a switch to outfield wouldn't be too difficult for him.
Yeah, Preston is, as a writer for Baseball America was saying, he's one of the best power hitters in the nation. He's a guy who can just knock it out. He's got rare power. A guy who. If he was going eligible in this draft, was apparently looking at a top 10 pick.
Yeah. Is that right?
What I was told.
Wow. See, and this is, I know you, just reading a story you gave me, you said like how people thought of him as this pole hitter in high school, and I couldn't have thought that to be more wrong last season. And anytime when he came up, because he's a big left-handed power hitter, you assume this guy's going to pull the ball. Everyone put the shift on him, moved over, and he would drive it to left field. More than anyone should have for like that is playing against the shift. It was very foolish of them because he was really good at it. And even early on when he didn't have the power numbers, you can still see he struck out very little.
Right.
He always was putting the ball in play. And he took the pitches he was given and went the other way if it was. And then there was a 3-home run game, which I called, but it was a joking call that he, the first home run was a blast to right. Over the scoreboard, it was a huge. It was a monster home run. The next one, it was an outside pitch. He went the other way with it, drove it to left field. So he steps up the center. It sets up the third time, and we said, we always joke that no matter how hard you hit the ball to center, it's never going out. It's a black hole. The ball is always going to be caught. There was balls that were that's just a bomb and always caught. So I step up. I go. He's hitting it to center this time. He went right. He went left. He's going center. Sure enough, he hits a laser line drive. I don't think it ever got higher than 15 feet, right over the center field wall. So he's shown that he has power, and he has power to all parts of the park. And in batting practice, I've raved about before, they just tell him what to do, and he does it. Mm. Like, they say go opposite field, and he hits home runs opposite field. They say pull the ball, and he's just, you know, he's putting it over the street behind the right field fence. It's just impressive to watch him. So I was really surprised that like people thought of him as a pole hitter, and I don't know if he's you know, change, and he's adjusted since then. But I mean, that's a really quick adjustment since, you know, in high school he was considered this pole hitter, and his freshman year he spreads the ball around.
I have two Preston Tucker questions real quick.
Is he God? Yes.
It was actually Jesus, not
that
God.
Was my Sorry. That's gonna be my third question. The first one was last year, I think it was Kyle most of the time talked about the fact that he would try, like, he's such a good hitter at making contact that sometimes he would swing at pitches that, you know, he wouldn't wait for the best pitch, that he'd just swing at one that he could hit, maybe not get the best hit possible. Do you feel like that's something he's improved a little bit, maybe pitch selection, watching from what you've talked to O'Sullivan?
I mean, basically what they've been saying is right now we're trying to make sure that he has a good eye, because not so much that, but the fact that, I mean, like we said, he can hit everything. Like, he's got incredible hand-eye coordination that if anything comes in, he can hit it. He's a great bad ball pitcher, a little bit like a Vlad Guerrero kind of a thing, where he can just golf. He can just go like a golf club and swing at the dirt and knock it in out of the park or whatever. But what he's saying is that now that he's had a year around, he had such a great second half of the season that a lot of the opposing pitchers are going to be not giving him stuff to hit. And because of that, he's going to have to be a lot more patient and take walks when they're giving it to him, or just take a single when they're giving it to him. It'd be interesting. But like you were saying, only 19 strikeouts all last season, which is incredible for a power hitter.
Yeah, you said, I think you're saying Maddux is likely to hit behind him. Do you know who that person's going to have the most important job on the team. Because Preston Tucker is not going to see the pitches he saw last year, and he needs protection. And if Austin Maddux is kind of like this class's Preston Tucker. He's the big power hitter, supposed to come right in and just, you know, just hit the ball out of the park every time he steps up. And he's going to have to show that he can do that. That way, teams can't just pitch around Preston Tucker the entire season.
Now, here's a little fun thing about Maddux, though, was he was in batting practice last week, and he was just standing up there, and they threw one over the middle, obviously, because it's batting practice. He knocked it over the left field bleachers, hit a light pole behind the left field bleachers. Tucker, on the other hand, aimed for a light pole on behind right field and almost hit it. Like, he kept going at the right on the right field light pole and just barely miss it every time.
Jeez.
So Maddux has the ability to do it. Tucker is so good that he can look at it and say,
yeah,
I think I'm gonna
no like
that.
I said they literally would give him instructions of where they wanted the ball, and then even after the first home run, the word that came out of the pitching coach's mouth or the hitting batting coaches was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. He just, you know, absolutely smashes it, and he says further, as in hit the ball further. And what does he do? Hits it further. It's the most impressive thing to watch, is them just like tell him what to do, and he can do it. It was really good. Like the first time I saw him in a scrimmage, he you know, exemplified the bad pitch hitter. There's one of their walk-ons throws a curveball low and outside. It was a good ball for, you know, them not to hit, and he goes down. The ball is way out of the strike zone and just drives it right out of the park. That was the first time I'm like, wow, you are something, Preston Tucker.
All right, so 10s all around?
Like I said, 11, 12. Whatever number I can put, and I'm putting it for him.
All right, well, I don't have as much of a crush on Preston.
Don't worry, you'll learn.
No, I will learn, I'm sure. But the thing is, like I'm saying, 10 is an All-American, and I'm not guaranteeing Preston's an All-American. He is probably, people are looking at him saying, I was reading something yesterday that said he's probably the second best first baseman in the nation right now. As a sophomore, it's still extremely impressive.
Yeah, right.
But because of the fact that, A, he's not going to get as many pitches to hit, and, B, there's going to be a lot more pressure on him. Remember last year, we're going to get to this later, but Matt Dindecker last year had a ton of pressure on him and a lot of expectations, and you don't know necessarily how the guy's going to react. Sure, he faced tougher pitching as the year went on, and people realized, okay, this guy can knock 3 home runs out in a game, hit 11 RBIs. He can do that, so we better not give him great pitches, or we better make sure we don't make mistakes against him. But he's had a whole offseason to have to think about that, and had a whole offseason of guys like me and whoever else coming up to him and saying things like, hey, so Preston, how are you dealing with these expectations?
Right.
And then him saying something like, oh, well, I just try not to think about it. But, of course, by me asking him that, he has to be thinking about it. So that's going to be an interesting thing, is how is he going to react to that? And so because of that, on my scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being an All-American, I would give him about a 7 or 8.
Ooh. Interesting.
That's
Bobby
absurd.
Looks angry.
I'm absurd.
I'm absurd.
Yeah.
Says Bobby Glick. He said I was.
I did. Daryl!
Proceed, Bob.
We know you're absurd. You gave him a 13.
I figured he'd give him at worst a 9.5. That's the lowest score you can give Preston Tucker. Moving on.
These are some insane expectations being placed upon him, though. You just called him Jesus and God.
Do you not remember the expectations I had for him at the start of last year?
Yeah, but like
those were outrageous, and he lived up. He passed those. Don't you quiet? Don't you silence me,
Bobby? The thing is, though, is that last year you had expectations for him, but not a whole lot of people did. Like national media wasn't hit to him yet. Like, you know what I mean? Like now you've got big publications talking about him. You've got guys projecting him as a top 10 pick in the MLB draft.
I'm not trying to say anything bad about Den Decker because he's a really nice guy, but he takes everything. Like you can see, he takes everything like extremely serious. He's got to work for everything he has. And he's not as natural as Preston was. Preston, like, goes out there and just balls. Whereas you can see Den Decker's got to work for everything he gets. And I think he came into that season with all these expectations, these new expectations that had never been around him because he was, you know, he went pretty much unrecruited, barely got into UF. He was going to go to a community college because no one wanted him. Yeah. And, you know, and all of a sudden he's a first-round guy. He's one of the best players in the nation. And I think he started thinking, like, I need to play like the best player in the nation. This is what I need to be. Whereas, like, Preston Tucker, just from all of the interviews I've done with him, that's never really been there. It's just this sense of, like, calmness that, like, you know, this is going to come. Like, even when he wasn't hitting for power, you can see, like, he wasn't really worried. He was developing. Like, I think that type of his mentality is going to allow him to not worry as much about the expectations as it affected Den Decker just because of how Den Decker had to work much harder than Preston Tucker did.
All right, well, let's move on from Preston, then we could talk about him for an entire show if we wanted to. Yeah. Let's go to second base, Josh Adams.
This is the guy I'm most confident in of anyone. I would put him at a 9, not a 10, because 10, again, is an All-American, and right. I'm not going to go in here. I'm not going to give anyone a 10. There's no way that anyone here
then
is
going
to
have what? Then why have the 10? Well, if you're unwilling to give the 10, why give it?
I would give Tucker a 10 if he came out this year. Like, if we did this show next year and Tucker just had an awesome year and was an All-American and was coming back again, I'd give him a 10.
So you're ready to
give
him a 10
next year. It's there for a measuring stick. But I would give Josh Adams a 9 because he's been in the league 2 years, and he's All-SEC 2 years. He's batted 340 and then 337, I think, or those two numbers. There's something along those lines. He's a good hitter. He's consistent. He's a good fielder. He's everything you want in a second baseman.
Fielder. You don't think so? He struggled a lot in the field last year at times. He was part of the where are we going to play this guy next? Because Josh Adams was going to be in the lineup. But then there was other guys that you were like, well, we don't know. And he played third. He played short. He played second. I think at one point he might even played center field. Or no, his freshman year he played center field. Hmm. And maybe even left field. I'm not sure. He plays anywhere on the field. So he's the guy that's going to be in the lineup. You don't know where. It looks like second base is his spot, which is kind of where he should be. But I know it's shortstop we're about to talk about. It's two freshmen battling it out for it. So if they can't do it, it'd be an easy thing to put him over there and let whoever else, someone play second base. He can play any position in the infield and they'll move him around. But yeah, no, I feel confident in him. They'll move him around in the lineup as well. I think he's batted second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. He's batted at all those spots. He'll probably, I assume, bat second in the lineup.
Yeah. The way the lineup's looking right now is you have Den Decker leading off.
Yeah.
Then you'd have Adams second, and then Tucker third, and then Maddox fourth. Yeah. And then after that, maybe the next hour.
But like I said, if Maddox isn't stepping up, expect Adams to be used to help Tucker or Tucker to help Adams. Those two are the big guys that need to produce because those two are the proven guys that have shown like they can drive in batter, they can drive in the runs, and they can get on base for other people. So those two are going to be the nucleus of this offense, and you need those two to help each other to get out of any slump that they're getting in.
Nine. But talking about the lineup real quick. Like you were saying, obviously, this lineup's going to be built around Preston. How are you going to get him to a point where he can get pitches to hit? And talking to his high school coach, what he was saying was after Preston's junior year in high school at Tampa Plant High, he broke a school record, 51 RBIs in 25 games. He was dubbed the RBI machine by his coach. The Terminator type of a thing. I don't know. But he said
you're not even giving him an 8. That's keep going. Sorry. Okay, just keep going.
You got the context of the reasoning, though. Anyway, His senior year, he wasn't getting any pitches to hit as like I expect to happen this year. Mm-hmm. And so what he did was he moved Tucker up to second and basically said, you're going to have to pitch to him. If you walk him, you're walking it for our other guys who are solid hitters as well, which is really interesting. You think about it. It's like,
yeah,
I mean, you're putting your best hitter at second just because you're so confident in him. You'd rather have him hitting solo home runs than having a chance to go up to the plate with guys on base because you know people won't pitch to him otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, it's really important that, I mean, not only does he have protection behind him, but he's got guys that are putting, getting on base in front of him. That way, if you're willing to walk him, you're putting more guys on base for the next guy. And, you know, if Dendek and Adams gets on, there's two men on, you choose to pitch around him, you've loaded the bases with no outs. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do that. And that's why it's important for not only the guy behind him to be hitting, but the two guys in front of him to just get on base.
All right, we're going to move on to third base then.
Yeah,
this is another new guy, right?
Yeah.
Bryson Smith?
He's another guy with really high expectations.
He was the National Junior College Player of the Year last year. He put up some insane numbers. Hit 467, 21 home runs, 90 RBIs. Which are, like I said, insane, but at the same time, the home runs and the batting average aren't that different from a lot of the high school guys that you see coming in here.
Right.
Guys that come in, get batting 550 or whatever. It's ridiculous, and it's hard to measure. And for me, I'm not a whole really confident in him for two reasons. One is his defense is pretty bad, and two, he didn't play anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, whether or not played anybody. I mean, he still is putting up big numbers. He's still coming in with a reputation of being a very good hitter. And, I mean, as long as he's producing at the plate, they can work with his fielding. I mean, they can deal with one person being a little bit of a weakness, especially at third base where, I mean, you're going to get some balls, but you're not going to get too many. You know, I mean, you can deal with, like, a lot of ones that, like, you need to be a great fielder to get to.
He's going
to
hit fifth.
I think he's probably going to hit fifth based on his power numbers that he put up last year.
Okay.
He's not a real big guy, which surprised me. Like I'm 6'5", so everyone I talk to seems kind of small.
Everyone I talk to seems really big.
I was going
to
say when Bobby and I talked again.
When Bob was covering the women's soccer team, they all seemed like giants.
I love covering the gymnastics team. They made me feel huge. If I could cover gymnastics the rest of my life, I'd be pretty happy.
Gymnastics and Irving Walker for the basketball team.
Oh, yeah, no, I love Irv. I'll talk to him every day, even though he's not a great quote. He's just right there on my eye level. It makes me feel good. Brandon James as well.
Yeah, they're listening to the podcast right now.
Oh, of course they
are. Sure. They're pretty excited about that.
All right, Smith numbers. What do y'all think?
I'll give him a 6.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to move Tucker to 8 and give Smith a 6 because I can't justify having Smith a 6 and Tucker
right.
a 7. I'll give Tucker an 8.
You're just going to keep moving up until you realize
because I don't think he's 9 to me is a guaranteed All-SEC good chance or like at least a solid chance of All-American. Mm-hmm. I'm not guaranteeing that Preston does that just because of what, like I said earlier, what's going to happen.
All right, shortstop. I think you said you got a mix of two freshmen here. You got Nolan Fontana.
Yeah.
Written as the projected starter.
And Bucky Dent's son, Cody.
Huh. Yeah, that's another fun fact. Put that in there. Cross
that's
out.
It's number five
on the day. Nolan, I think.
Bust out another one.
I'm sure you will. We weren't sure exactly which way that was going to go as far as Nolan versus Cody. But then Kevin O'Sullivan kind of tipped his hand last week, and I asked him who's going to be a leadoff hitter, and said Dendecker probably, but there's a good chance Nolan can too because he runs so well. And so what that means is, and this is the if you're not first, you're last award.
Right.
If Nolan doesn't lead off, which I don't think he will, I think Dendecker will, you're going to put him at like 9th because then that way you have another guy that, I mean, the same kind of characteristics and put him 9th, especially with the DH and everything like that. So because of that, I'm pretty sure Nolan's going to end up starting over Cody, at least to begin the season. But they both said like it's neck and neck. Of course they're going to say that. But I will add real quick that I think that's going to make them – it's going to be really interesting because they're both pretty talented. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with them. And also I think if one isn't doing good, the other one will jump in. And by not having be able to get in a groove, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I'm actually going to put the shortstop position – as the opposite of what I'm thinking of Bryson Smith, where they can build around his defense and not worry about as long as he's producing with offense. I think if Dendecker starts, this is completely up in there because O'Sullivan really builds around the, we're going to make sure the middle of the field is strong. He starts with pitching and catching.
Right.
That's where he knows, like, this is how we're going to win games. And then he wants his shortstop, his second baseman, his center fielder to all be great defensively.
Yeah,
Dendecker's
like
an incredible defense. And so I think whoever you got at shortstop needs to be a great defender more so than provide for his bat, which although what's
Mike Mooney
yeah Mike
yeah,
Mooney
what's the Mike
he,
Mooney joke about
what, no
explain
Mooney
that. I'm sure he's pissed right now listening to the podcast.
Mooney was awful
playing
absolutely
the Baltimore Orioles minor league system
awful his first few weeks But then after that, he really got into a groove defensively. He came in as like, you know, a junior college like Golden Glove winner. He was a defensive player of the league, and he kind of ended up living up to that kind of expectation, where he was a very solid defensive player towards the end of the year, and even did a little bit with his bat. But yeah, he got drafted, and he made the wise decision of get out while someone's willing to take me, exactly. Because I don't think he gets drafted again. Yeah. But he really solidified that shortstop position defensively, and I think that's what you need from whoever is going to start there. Who's ever playing best defensively, unless you need Fontana, however you say it.
Fontana.
Fontana. to lead off.
All right, y'all got a number for him?
I'll go 4.
Yeah, I was going to say 4. I can't give a freshman anything higher than like a 4, honestly.
Yeah, it's the same thing as the catcher position, where if you don't know who it's going to be, especially, I think you got to stay below 5. All right, move on to left field. You got Tyler Thompson and Daniel Piggott.
Well, really, what I'm expecting is the Piggott brothers, Jonathan and Daniel, to start on the left and right, and then you'll have Bendecker in center. But you've also got Thompson making waves, apparently, and Cam Washington also making waves. And the thing is that it doesn't matter, they can go left or right, basically. So the way I see it is Tyler Thompson and Cam Washington are kind of pushing the Piggott brothers to get some playing time.
Daniel Piggott played a lot in right, so mm-hmm. I mean, I see this being as a completely open competition between both fields. I think Daniel Piggott's probably the best of all 4 of them. Jonathan Piggott, I think, ended up batting a little bit better than he did, but clearly, like, Daniel Piggott earned the starting job before his brother did, despite being the younger brother, and he looked impressive. He went through a little bit of a slump, but even when he was slumping, you can see that he was still hitting the ball pretty well. Mm-hmm. Whereas Jonathan Piggott, I felt like there was an occasional time where he hit the ball too, like, really well, but overall I was never impressed with Jonathan Piggott. So I'm not sure if he'll hold down a position, but I think Daniel Piggott's the one guy that has one of those two, and they need to find another person. But the right fielder, although usually you put, you know, whoever has the strongest arm, the right field had very little responsibility in this team last year, because Avery Barnes and Matt Dendecker might have been able to cover the entire outfield by themselves. Wow. It was Dendecker caught balls where why are you calling people off when the ball's in right by the right field line? Like, he was calling people off well out of, you know, what you would put in the center fielder's range, and he covers a lot of ground, which will be really helpful next year when you don't know exactly what it was. But him and Avery Barnes both just covered so much ground, and that really helped the right fielder not have too much of a defensive role.
All right, what do y'all want to give number wise for the left field? Say Daniel Piggott, I guess.
Daniel Piggott, I'll give a 6.
Okay.
For right field, I don't know who it's going to be, but I don't have expectations for any of them. I'll put it at 4.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think Piggott, I would put him around the same line as Bryson Smith, like a 6, a guy who, I mean, I feel kind of confident this guy can do some stuff, but at the same time, I don't think anyone's building the lineup around him. And then on the other side, right field, Jonathan, not great. His numbers are actually pretty good, but he didn't get a whole lot of playing time last year, so it's, again, hard to tell. So you can't feel completely confident in that. And then all the underclassmen, it's just like, all right, well, they're, again, underclassmen. Yeah, we can't give anything. Our rule, we can't give them anything other than a 5.
I almost missed my transfer. Fun fact number 6, Cam Washington is Cody Dent's high school teammate.
Yes, all right, but they don't live together, so I don't know what's up with that.
Ooh, that's 7. Also, I had a question. Was it a fun fact that the younger Piggott earned a starting spot before the older Piggott?
Not really. That's an easy fact to find out.
It's more just kind of sad.
That's
really
true.
Fun.
All right, let's move on to center field. Matt Dendecker, we've talked about him a little bit. Let's go ahead and dive into that a little bit more.
Dendecker, I actually have higher expectations than I should, just because he has been really good in the past. He showed that last year he struggled, but the eyes are no longer on him, and I think that's really going to help. No one's expecting him to be, you know, the star that they thought he was going to be last year. And like I said, just defensively, even if he's still struggling offensively, his defense is just so good that you can't take him out of the lineup, really, because you're going to lose so much in the outfield.
But once people start thinking you're good, like Dendecker, you can't really lose that. You know what I mean? Like, Dendecker now has tasted like what it's like to have expectations of going high in the draft. Right. And it's not like he can come into this year and be like, oh, I don't care where I get drafted anymore. Like, it's such a relief. He's still thinking, I can be a high draft pick.
Right.
He said that when I interviewed him. He said, I think I can be a high draft pick. That was a quote. So, it's a fun quote. That's fun quote number 1.
Separate column here. Hold on.
I think he's going to rebound. I don't think he's going to exactly be the type of player that everyone thought he was, but I'm going to put him as an 8 for me.
Wow.
Like I said, I really think he's good.
Well, first of all, I want to know why you think that he will be able to do better this year than last year.
just how he was playing last year was not what people had seen in the past, how he's his approach at the plate. I think it's been ran that he's changing that. He's trying to get rid of trying to pull the ball, because you could see he was just – he's reaching for stuff. He's trying to be that home run guy that people thought he was. And that's never been his part of his game. Like, when I, you know, talk to people from, you know, he's always had some power, but he's always been a speed guy. He's always been that leadoff man who can, you know, beat out an infield, a little dribbler down, you know, to the shortstop, to the third baseman. And I think that's what he's going to kind of get back to, is he's going to go back to hitting for contact, and power numbers will start coming once that happens. Is that once he relaxes and he's just trying to swing and make contact with it, and he's got the power that to drive the ball, and that will start coming back. But I think he's going to go back to being that contact hitter, and he's going to be getting on base, and that's what they need from him in the leadoff spot. He's going to be on getting on base. He can run really well, and he's going to score. He's going to be. He's probably. I think his average is going to be pretty good. Not amazing. Not 360. Not 370. Probably, you know, a little above 300. 320. Whatever it is. But he's going to score runs. He's going to do what they need to him, and he's going to go away from trying to pull the ball for home runs.
Okay. I mean, I would give him about a six, just because my problem with him was it's not the mechanics. That wasn't the problem with the way he swung. I think that wasn't the issue. The issue was, and he said, was he was pressing. And I just feel like he's still going to be – I mean, if it comes down to what if he has a couple bad weekends here, he still wants to end up getting cash in, get a first or second round draft pick money. And so all of a sudden he might revert back to pressing. It's gonna be, I mean, maybe he learned his lesson, maybe he didn't, but because he showed last year that he is capable of pressing when he's against the wall, he could do it again. Right. So I'm gonna give him a six.
That kind of thing's a little bit hard to let go of, sort of. So if that, it's sort of like a habit you fall back into. Like if you face that kind of pressure, you fall back into that behavior. I think he's gonna be a critical player for this team, though, whether or not they're successful in the long run. All right, we're going to wrap this show up with our weekly awards and then our Gator Guarantees. We're going to start off with our Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. We're going to end on a happy note with the Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport. Let's start with Mike for your Kyle.
All right, I'm going to go with a kind of combo of the International Olympic Committee and whatever they call that dog and pony show running the Vancouver Winter Olympics right now. I can't say enough about how upset I am about the Georgian loser Nodar Kumaratashvili, I believe is how you say his name, who died last week in a training run. I mean, they knew that this luge track was dangerous, that the speeds were higher than they'd ever been anywhere. Lugers had expressed concerns about it. The Canadians also didn't allow anyone to test it besides the Canadian team before, like, the, you know, pre-Olympic warm-up run started, so nobody really knew what they were getting into. There's just no reason to really push the boundaries like they did. I mean, I understand that if you host an Olympics, you want to have a bunch of world records set at your Olympics. It'll be remembered for that. But this was just irresponsible and out of control. And the worst part about it was that they had steel beams at the bottom of this track that weren't padded. And I don't even know, when you're flying through the air, he was probably going 60, 70 miles an hour at that point. Even if you hit a pad on a pole, I mean, you're still going to get messed up. But that whole thing was just handled very poorly. And, you know, when you look at that and then the technical difficulties they had at the opening ceremonies.
Zamboni. For speed skating, they needed to, I guess it was affecting the ice, the humidity or something, and they needed Zambonis to smooth the ice out. They brought out one, it broke down. So, like, all right, bring in the backup, and they brought out the backup, and that broke down. So they had to postpone the event to bring in a different Zamboni from Calgary. So you Special would think litter. That the, you know, the hockey capital of the world would have decent Zambonis, but they don't.
And the weather has been really bad. That's not really their fault. But just, all, I mean, every Olympics has tons of problems. It's a massive undertaking. There was a bombing at the Atlanta one. I mean, all kinds of terrible stuff happens, and you normally can come out of it, you know, without having a black mark left on you. But the fact that a loser died, it's something that could have been pretty preventable. And also the way they handled it was weak. They kind of blamed it on him and said it was his error. Okay, sure, it's his error that he crashed. It's not his error that the track was designed in such a way that he flew off the track into an unprotected steel beam. Mm. So I think
he aimed for the beam.
I think that's something that's going to stick on this, you know, Olympics for a long time to come, as it should.
All right, Bobby?
I'm going to stick with the Olympics. But I'm not going to blame the Olympics committee for this one. I'm blaming the snowboard cross, one of the best in the world, supposedly, Lindsay Jacob Ellis. You might remember her from the previous one, where she decided to, on the final jump of her championship run, to celebrate with a nice little board grab, as she clearly was about to win the event. And what does she do? She falls and loses and blows away her gold medal. She comes into this one, still the favorite, still conceivably the best, and again, she kind of stumbles, hits like an out-of-bounds flag, and she's disqualified, and again doesn't medal. Very disappointing that, you know, she's not even just getting beat by people, but she's beating herself. It's kind of embarrassing.
Shaming her country,
yeah,
right.
Of course. If this was made into a movie, she'd probably be exiled to Jamaica and eventually, you know, asked by some sprinters to
There's
help her.
There's a reason
her
they don't ask you to make movies, Bob. And that's it.
I believe I'm using this as an actual movie. Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings? Oh,
yes.
I knew you were going
except that it was
going
to be, eventually, it would be a snowboard team. Jamaica, we have a snowboard
team. They've already
team.
Made that movie. So
yeah, no.
We did the remake.
Are you saying that...
Except the new Karate Kid.
Have you watched movies recently? Because they've been extremely original, wouldn't you say, in the last 10 years? All it is remakes, books, real story. Like, this is a real story. Come on. No one's original. Use all the old stuff.
You're a curmudgeon of the old man, Bob.
But that doesn't make... Okay. There's a lot of people that make really bad movies. That doesn't give you an excuse to go and make a bad movie as well.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, you can.
I got to get paid.
All right. Moving on.
All right, Tyler. Give
okay, my bad call of the week is the Slovakian...
It's bad angle.
Bad angle of the week.
Yeah. Sorry, I apologize.
Kyle Jackson was making bad calls. He was just not ever finding people where he was.
He just won good. Just good.
Okay, well, anyway... I'm going to go with the Slovakian women's hockey team. 18-0 they lost to Canada. Did they even practice?
Why you got to kick them when they're down, man?
Why you show up to the Olympics and then lose 8? Like, I feel like we could, if we trained long enough as an office, like everyone in the office, if we trained long enough, and we all learned how to skate. Like I said, I'm really tall, so it's hard for me. But I feel like we could at least hold it to less than 18-0.
You would be the enforcer on the team.
Oh, yeah, I'd be the Peter Worrell. I couldn't skate.
I love Peter Worrell.
Me and Bobby would both be enforcers.
I never understood really why Peter Worrell went out onto the court with, or the ice with a stick. He's never going to use it. Huh. All he was going to do is get into a fight and then go into the penalty box and then go back to the bench. But yeah. I love Peter Worrell.
Well, the stick was used for balancing because he couldn't skate.
Right. Okay. He's like, got to hold himself up. It's like a cane. You know what you guys would be? And I love any time I can work a Mighty Ducks comparison in here.
The Bash Brothers?
You guys would be the Bash Brothers, absolutely.
Well, actually, as a child, I was a pretty good goalie. I never really used to learn my stick, but I was always because I always played baseball, a great glove hand. Great glove hand.
Sure.
All right. Well, but another note, though, is that the USA women's team, we beat the Russians 13-0. And I kind of wish that the coach for USA would have referred to it as the Soviet Union or something like that and made it out to be like a miracle situation. Like... We're gonna win the Cold War. I wish that they would do that. Like this is payback. But
I wanted the speech from Rocky IV. If I could change,
you
could
change.
We all could
change.
That would have been good for the women's
after a 13-0 win. Yeah. It would have been great. I don't think the Russian women are allowed to play hockey. Maybe that's why I just pissed off an entire country, Russia. So.
The people over in Eastern Europe has the right idea. Women shouldn't be playing sports.
Well, but now we pissed off the entire population.
All right, good job. Well,
you're welcome.
I'm going to I'll bring him back with this. I'm going to give my Kyle Jackson to Florida defensive tackle Gary Brown, who was arrested on charges of hitting a woman, I believe, scratching, and I believe he hit a woman in the face was the charge.
He slapped an open hand hit one in the face, and he scratched another after they were being kicked out because apparently his friend was being obnoxious, and his friend decided to steal the fire extinguisher and spray it on the people of the party. I mean, he was just trying to have a good time.
He was acting a fool, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
He was having a good time.
But this is just another Gator getting arrested for, especially another Gator getting arrested for hitting women. Like, they need to stop this immediately, I would say. So I'm going to give my Kyle Jackson to Gary Brown.
Right. So all of us, except for Bobby, love women, just so you know.
Well, me and Gary Brown.
Right.
I would put you all on the same level. Don't like women. The rest of us, we're fans. What you do.
Mike, you want to give a Reggie out?
Okay. No. This isn't really from this past week, but it got me thinking about it today, just with Stan Drayton out there. Urban Meyer and Stan Drayton for settling their differences like men, working it out. I think that's definitely the best move for the staff. I think Stan Drayton's a good coach, and he's in a great situation now with a bunch of kids who he either helped recruit or has coached in the past. Also, my boy Moody is going to get more carries, which is good for all of us, even if you don't know it yet. So, good hire, good move. I'm glad they patched things up, and... you know, practice what they preach a little bit about being men and not having egos and working together on this staff. So good for them.
If they really settled to like men, though, they would have had a draw on Stadium Road.
Right.
So I'm disagreeing that this is a manly thing.
Yeah, Dawn, Pistols. Yeah. All right, Bob, ready?
I'm sticking with the coaching hires, and I'm going with Terrell Austin. I have no clue if he's going to be good. I don't really care. He's just a really nice guy, and it's refreshing to have a nice coach talk to you from the football team, besides Dan McCartney and Chuck Heater. But they for some reason, get the feeling. I think because we're always so excited to see them,
right.
They almost take us as sarcastically happy. But it's not. It's just really nice to talk to people who don't hate us.
Yeah, I got to say, the most impressive thing about Terrell Austin today for me, somebody asked him about his kids. He has five of them. And they asked him how
old
they were.
Three boys, two girls.
Yeah, they asked him how old they were. And he just rattled them off, like, right away. Like, age and month of birth.
Wow.
Yeah, like, right in a row. He looked, seems like a legitimate family man, which you can never really tell if these guys are. They all say they are. I mean, Meyer always says he is, but he's clearly not with what he's going through right now. And his whole decision to not resign. But, yeah.
Couldn't let down the team.
I was really impressed.
Nikki just wanted her daddy back.
I was really impressed by Terrell Austin. Mm-hmm.
So did Tebow.
Good work.
All right, Tyler.
Okay.
Reggie?
Good call, right? Is what you call it?
Reggie Nelson, Award for Excellence in the
Award
Field.
Award for
sport.
Excellence in the Field. Okay, I'm sorry.
the ironically long name.
Yeah,
one.
Okay. I'll go with Chandler Parsons for cutting his hair. I mean, it's actually, you don't really know yet. Maybe that was like what was getting him good. But at the same time, you got to be hot when you're running around with that much. You have that much hair. So.
Have you seen his girlfriend? He just needs to do whatever she wants.
Yeah, I asked him about that, like, kind of sarcastically at media. I was like, did your girlfriend make you do it? He was like, you know, she wanted me to. I don't know. He posted on Facebook asking the world to, so it was, I don't know. I don't know why he did it, but maybe it was too bad for him. It was too long for him. I don't know.
The fact that we all know what his girlfriend looks like, though, is a little bit
She's concerning. Around. I cover the basketball team.
Okay.
Yeah.
You interviewed her yet?
No.
Should have interviewed for the haircut article.
For the haircut article. Why haven't I done a haircut article?
Yeah, you mean,
well, he said he was going to wear a headband if he got two out of hand.
With the Walter Hodge haircut.
He went to the same guy. There's a fun fact.
Yeah,
write that one
go.
Down. He
Wait,
went to the same,
the
same,
guy, as
same guy as Walter Hodge. Same guy as Walter Hodge.
Did he get designs in his hair?
No, he did not. We also asked him that.
That's a fun fact. Cuts hair in our dorm room. It's fun.
Oh, nice.
We turn, yeah. So.
All right, I'm going to give out my Reggie to, as Mike referred to him in a column, super lawyer Huntley Johnson. He is capable of getting any Florida athlete, especially football players, out of anything they do. I was down at the courthouse doing some stuff for a class of mine. I decided to look up some old, like, athletes, you know, stuff they'd got in trouble with the law, and I figured it all just disappears at some point. So props to you, Huntley Johnson, for
limited to football players either, because he got Stephen Locke out of trouble last year.
Right, for just athletes in general. So yeah. Man does things above the law, man. He's
impressive guy. He also got himself out of trouble, though. Didn't he have, like, a sexual
he
harassment
He did have a sexual
against
harassment
him?
Case against him for apparently
props
being,
for that, Huntley.
Being inappropriate in his office with a female secretary. But, yeah, no, he's quite good, apparently. If I get in legal trouble, I'm going right to Huntley.
I'm sure he'd love to have you.
He's very good at what he
does. I got some breaking news. This won't be breaking news for anyone listening to this podcast, probably, but this literally just got announced. Tiger Woods having a press conference on Friday to discuss his future. Where is it going to be held? Ponte Vedra Beach, son, my hometown.
No.
That's where it's going down.
Oh, no.
The spotlight will be on Ponte Vedra again. That's where it should be.
In the spot, well, the sunshine is always on Ponte Vedra.
The sunshine's always there, but now there's a spotlight as well.
Well, then maybe you can have a hometown mistress as well. My hometown
that's
of
true.
Wellington, we had the infamous cougar as one of his mistresses. So maybe Ponte Vedra can finally have a Tiger Woods mistress like Wellington.
Are we making this a competition?
It is.
The Ponte Vedra mistresses just know how to keep their mouths shut.
Well.
Right? They're respectful.
So they don't know how to get paid is what you're saying.
They get paid. Yeah. They do get paid. They just don't talk.
Yeah. I was just going to say Steen Hatchie, to my knowledge, did not have a Tiger Woods mistress in my hometown.
Yet.
Do you think Tiger Woods has ever heard of Steen Hatchie? I'd say been, but I'm going to switch it over to Steen Hatchie.
There hasn't been a Steen Hatchie invitational lately. It's been on the back burner.
Not anytime lately.
Putt-putt tournament.
There's no putt-putt course in Steen Hatchie. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to do our Gator guarantees, but before we make ours, let's review the ones we made last week. I'll go ahead and say that I was wrong. I said Kenny Boynton would score 20 and Florida would win in against Xavier.
That's a bold thing to do, to say that you were wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, that was debatable, too.
Yeah.
That was a kind of an evil laugh you had going on there.
Yeah, you were happy to see me fail,
like,
Bob.
Oh, Kenny thought he could score 20.
Anytime Dale's wrong about something, I'm happy.
I believe Kenny scored 12 and Florida lost by 12, so I was horribly wrong on both accounts. Phil, on the other hand, changed history and was right. Phil has never been right before about anything, so you got to give props to Phil for saying that UF softball would lose one game in its opening weekend. Nice job, Phil. Enjoy it while it lasts. And Kyle made a prediction that if UF beat Xavier, they would make the tournament, and if they lost, they'd miss the tournament. That is still to be determined. They lost, so right now Kyle is locked into saying UF will not make the tournament based off that Gator guarantee. So let's move on. We'll make some of our own. We'll go in reverse order. Tyler?
Ooh. Okay, I'm going to guarantee that this weekend, we've been talking about it, whether or not Preston's going to be patient at the plate this year with everyone kind of staying away from him and his ability to hit scoreboards and hit the ball off the tee, essentially.
Scoreboard. He hits it over the scoreboard.
You can hit the ball through the scoreboard if you want to.
I'm sure.
But
if the coach asked him to hit it through the scoreboard, he would hit it through the scoreboard.
And they'd say make a bigger hole next time.
Yeah.
Hit it through the same hole the second time. Anyway, I think he's going to be patient. I think they're going to pitch away from him, and he'll draw 6 walks this weekend in 3 games.
That's quite a bit. I'm going to stick with the Preston Tucker theme, and I'm gonna give him as much love as I possibly can.
Of course you are.
And I'm going to say that he hits 2 home runs this weekend.
Wow.
It's not very good competition, and he's a very good hitter.
They're actually hitting off a tee this weekend, so he might be able to do that.
I'm going to say Florida loses to Auburn at home tomorrow night, or Thursday night, in basketball. Hmm. That's not something that should happen by any means, but I just have a bad feeling about them right now. I think they're tired. I don't think they're going to play well at home. They were shooting so well for a while.
Well, Irving was.
Yeah. The team percentages were like around 50%
because of Irving, because he was shooting like 70% from three.
And now that that's gone and they're shooting so badly from the free throw line, I don't know. The team just doesn't look like they have it together right now to me, so I'm going to say they lose to Auburn.
All right. Well, you're probably being more realistic than I'm about to right now, but I have hope for myself, and I want to go somewhere and cover the NCAA tournament. And I have a pretty good history of Gator guarantees being right, so I'm going to try to will this one into existence. I'm going to say Florida plays 3 games in the next week. They play Auburn Thursday, at Ole Miss Saturday, and Tennessee next Tuesday night in Gainesville.
You're going to say they win all 3?
I'm going to say they win all 3. They need to, and if they do, they're going to put themselves on the path of the NCAA tournament, and they're going to keep me from covering an NIT game in front of 2,500 people in the O'Connell
Center. You would save the Alligator a lot of money by having to cover the NIT.
I'm out to get mine, Bob. I'm out to get mine.
Sticking with the get paid theory. I like it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Same reason I'm going to pull out something about cool, I don't know, cool boarding. There we go. Get ready for it. It's hitting the motion pictures
cool
in about 20 years or
something. All right, Adam Carolla, that's shameful.
That's shameful, Bob. All right, that wraps it up for this show. Anybody else got anything to say before we leave here?
No.
Tyler, it's been good having you on for the first show.
It's been really a lot of fun. Thanks to all the listeners to listen. Everyone out there, I don't know, it was the people in Gainesville. We got that one cat in Houston.
I don't really like this.
Any international listeners? Do you have any Japanese guys
He's
listening?
Not in Houston. I believe you're talking about Ed Spillane.
Or boy.
He'd be in what? College Station. Yeah, College Station.
Oh, right. Sorry. We haven't met yet. I apologize.
I don't really like the facade that Tyler has going on, that he's this calm, relaxed character when he might be one of the loudest out of us when we're in the office. So I'm. You
Says
know what?
You.
Say, no, exactly. That's my point. Is that
look
I'm saying,
at, look at
yeah,
the
look
waves.
At it. The thing is spiking every time I talk. But when Tyler's in the office, much louder, I'm going to say, Tyler, this will eventually come out, and everyone's going to realize the real Tyler's much louder than what he pretended to be today.
I do bring the party occasionally.
It's going to get rowdy at some point when me and Tyler are on this podcast.
We'll figure out what buttons to push. I'll do it, because I don't want to be considered the loud one for the rest of
my...
Yeah, I mean, I will be, but for the rest of this semester, you at one point will be the loud one, and I'm going to love that moment.
All right, we're going to have Tyler back on, though, when we talk baseball, maybe some other stuff. So send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. Thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry!